Hi, Oliver. It's great to see you again.
Good to see you too.
I also enjoyed your music last night.
Thank you.
So, I made a special request.
Hope you're having a beautiful
So,
Sunday. I know a lot of people are eagerly anticipating this program today.
well, that makes me feel great, and I'm sure that makes Pamela, my guest, feel even greater. So, yeah, that's why we're here. So, Oliver, should I go right in to the
Yes, please do.
subject matter?
Yes, ma'am, because even a co-worker of mine today came into the studio and she said she's looking forward to your program this evening. And as I had messaged you, it was right on point because she has a son who's 7 years old and he's having problems focusing. She's wondering what it could be
Okay.
and what can she do.
All right. Well, let me just welcome everyone in Barbados, friends, family, members, Barbadians across the length and breadth of, what did they call us? 21 miles long and a smile wide. And all those Barbadians who are across the world. So a warm welcome to everyone. Today, our focus is going to shift a little bit. We've dealt with psychiatrists and various issues that have been presented to them. We've dealt with psychologists, but it gives me great pleasure to introduce actually a former colleague, Pamela Jones Goodridge, who is a clinical social worker. And we are going to be focusing more today on children and adolescents and maybe even young adulthood. And I was thinking to myself, even I am the mother of two girls, and I was thinking, yes, you think about your health, there's conception, you think about your health, the baby's health. Nutritional care, clothing, you go to your pediatrician or family doctor, but we never really, I certainly never thought about my children's mental health, not in those early stages. But before I proceed, just let me introduce Pamela. So Pamela Jones Goodridge is a trained social worker with more than 20 years of experience. Both locally and internationally. She has worked in New York, Scotland, and the Cayman Islands. She holds a double master's degree in administrative and clinical social work. She has traversed many areas from working with abused children to her present role within the special needs education. So she currently works with children who have special needs. She was privileged to have honed her skills in crisis intervention after she was assigned to a critical intervention response team following 9/11. So I would imagine this would have been in New York, Pamela.
Yes, it was.
Okay, and again in Scotland, when she was assigned to the Child Protection Unit charged with working with trafficked children, which is another issue that we face in today's modern world. She's a mother of a beautiful 18-year-old, and a strong advocate for the disadvantaged and disenfranchised populations. Pamela, I want to welcome you and thank you for being here with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so as I always say to every guest, it's amazing how quickly this hour goes. And usually Oliver's very kind to us. So, Pamela, I want to start by asking you, what is the difference between a general social worker and a clinical social worker? Because I mean, just let me say, in my career, we've talked a lot about, having social workers assigned to schools and stuff like that is obviously a need. What is the difference?
So many people use the term social worker loosely without realizing that there are various categories of social workers. You have the generalist practitioners, and then you have the clinical social workers like what I am. The thing is about clinical social workers, we are trained generalist practitioners first. To become a clinical social worker, you go on to study further, in which is what I did when I pursued my master's in the double major that I did. And the difference boils down to a legal aspect, in that while all social workers can connect with clients to offer guidance and resources through difficult social situations, only clinical social workers are trained to provide counseling treatments. Unfortunately, the way we are set up here in Barbados, it doesn't always translate to that. And what you would have is generalist social workers who are actually doing counseling treatments that they're not qualified or trained to do. Where I was trained in the US. I went to Ivy League University in the US, and this was something that was taught to us, in that generalist practitioners should never delve into the area of clinical work, because without the training, you do not know exactly what you're doing or where you're guiding the client. What you say or do to a client can make the difference between a client leaving your office feeling motivated and that they have received the help to make it over the next hurdle, as opposed to going on top of a building and jumping off. And if you don't have the training to be able to guide the client successfully, you actually do more harm than good. The thing is, we do not have a professional body here in Barbados to provide that oversight, as you have existing in the US. In the US, there's the NASW and the National Association of Black Social Workers, which I maintain my affiliation with. We don't have that oversight here in Barbados, and therefore, you have a lot of persons dabbling in areas that they really aren't qualified to dabble in, so to speak.
Can I interject? Mm-hmm. So what is the role of the Barbados Association of Professional Social Workers?
The Barbados Association, I'm not a part of that association, but what I do know about that association is that it does not really have legal jurisdiction over their workers. Like, for example, I'm a part of the National Association of Black Social Workers in the US. That's a carcass. Even though I am based in Barbados, I can still maintain membership of that association. And that's mainly, while it does not have oversight for me here in Barbados, it's actually a protective mechanism, because if I so choose to return to the US to work, I'm already an affiliated member. It means, because I'm affiliated member of that association, if I had to be engaged in bad practice, you know, we always talk about best practice. If I had to engage in bad practice and I was reported to the associations and stuff, I can lose my license to practice abroad. And considering that I've spent quite a chunk of my career working internationally, and you never know what the future may hold, I may end up working internationally again. Because I don't know what will happen, I have a vested interest in making sure that I constantly engage in best practices, because I would not want to lose any of the licenses that I have. I mean, while some have lapsed, I've tried my best to maintain some of them, but at one point in my career, I hold membership in both the UK Association of Social Workers, because I worked in Scotland and I had to be affiliated. I had to be a member to work in Scotland. I was a member of the association in the US. And also I was a member of the association in Australia, because at one point I was seeking to move to Australia and I needed to secure my membership in their association in order to move there.
Right. So you've raised a very interesting issue in terms of regulation and in terms of best practices versus bad practice. We certainly would want the best practice. The analogy you gave of someone wanted to jump onto a building and get in, you know, being counseled by an untrained person, particularly in crisis management. How do we get this right? And what are you aware of any attempts to regularize it so that the, you know, with all due respect, I think George Griffith is the president. I could be wrong, but how clearly the organization needs some teeth, some legal teeth then.
Like I said, I'm not a member of the association. I've been existing on the periphery of the association for years because, like I said, the body here does not have any legal framework whereby they can revoke a license and stop persons from engaging and practicing in the profession. So as a result of that, I haven't really sought to gain membership in the association. I'm aware of persons within the association, and I've worked previously at some points, at various points in my career with the association, but I've never actually joined the association. In order to correct that, I believe that they do reach out to other associations outside of Barbados, but in terms of getting the legal framework in place where they will have that oversight to revoke license. First thing first, we do not have licensure here. Our social workers exist in this country without license. And that's what makes all the difference as compared to the US, as compared to the UK and such forth. When I was working abroad, I had to have my license. And in order to have my license, I had to become a member of the associations because I had to pass their external mandates to achieve licensure to work in those jurisdictions. All because we don't have that license, that meet that requirement of licensure here, it becomes harder to have that legal oversight over individuals because we can't revoke a license rendering a person ineffective and unable to practice.
All right. Wow. Well, let's hope that I believe such matters would fall under the Ministry of People's Empowerment and Elderly Affairs. So I hope that that can be regularized or rectified at some point. Now, let's go to the heart of the matter. Your career experience has been wide and varied. Why is mental wellness important? Not just for adults, because if there's one positive thing that COVID-19 has brought, you know, is the permission to speak about or anxieties or depressions or fears or some people have panic attacks, stuff like that. But why is mental wellness and the well-being of children important?
Okay, a fantastic question. And I will start by saying, simply put, it's because kids are dealing with more today than they've ever dealt with before, than they've dealt with in yesteryear. I know for a fact at my age, the type of issues that my daughter, as a teenager, she's only 18 now, but between the ages of 13 or say 12 and 18 that she has dealt with, I have never dealt with those type of issues When I was in school, I mean, every now and again, you will have a one-off situation developing, but it is a constant attack, in my opinion, that these children are experiencing in terms of what's happening with them on a mental level, a social level, an emotional level. You have situations of increased family conflict. I don't know about you, but growing up, you know, you always heard about the fact that, you know, certain things you don't do in front of the kids.
Exactly.
That seems to be a thing of the past now. And we are having our kids so involved, and we are bringing them in to so many adult situations. Parents are back and forth with each other, and you have them playing the kids off against
each other,
and all of that is messing with children's emotional and mental well-being. Then you have the whole issue of that's family conflict. Then you have the whole issue of you know, increased incidences of abuse.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the physical and the sexual. We all know what physical and sexual abuse. I think we all have a great grasp of what can occur for a child who has endured physical or sexual abuse. What we seem to lack is an appreciation and an understanding for what verbal and emotional abuse can do for a child. I have this thing about me. I do not believe in labeling, because labeling is damaging. And we so glibly, we so easily let labels roll off our tongue without thinking about the emotional impact we have on children. I'm sure we've all experienced that teacher in school that will look at the child and ask the child, you know, a child does something that they don't necessarily agree with, and their response is, "You stupid."
Yeah.
You tell a person often enough they're stupid, it will mess with their psyche.
Yeah.
You know, you tell a person often enough that you aren't going to amount to anything. I mean, we have so many young people that you hear horror stories about their school experience that teachers will knowingly look at them and tell them, the rate you're going, you ain't going to amount to anything.
And then are you worthless just like your father?
Yeah, that is it. So we have kids dealing with the pressure at home, the emotional and verbal abuse at home. And then they go to school and they have to deal with it at school. They have to deal with it in their community. It's like there is no escape from it. None whatsoever. Children will be children. Kids will do silly things. Just recently we had students posting videos all over social media of them smoking and
vaping
and doing all of these things. I'm not saying what they're doing is right. It is wrong. But how we are treating to the situation, to me, makes it even worse. Because you post these things on social media, and then the whole of Barbados are comment on it. These children want beaten, they want this, they want that, forgetting the same very children that they're saying these things about are privy to the comments that are being said about them.
Yeah.
So how are you helping this child's self-esteem? How are you helping this child move from a place? Because obviously when children engage in those type of behaviors, it's a cry for help. So how are you helping them if you are in addition to the pressures that they are feeling that are making them do these things, you are further dumping on them by telling them they're no good?
Yeah. The whole question of parenting and bringing a child into this world and being responsible for a life an individual is a very serious one that
yes,
many of us don't even give a thought to. You know, we have sex and we get pregnant and it may or may not have been planned, but we don't really give, I'm just speaking, this is a very broad generalization, that yes, we don't stop to think that life is going to change, that this is a serious undertaking. You are responsible for this young male or female baby that's entering into the world. And there's a whole slew of things to consider now. And that baby is really priority number one.
Correct.
So when I see or hear of, you know, 14-year-olds who have been molested or even older teens, mm-hmm, you know, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20, I say to myself, well, I didn't even know. I don't even know how I would have navigated this situation were I 18, mm-hmm, you know, because it is a serious responsibility. Parenting.
Yeah.
And, yes, and I think is, whether you're married or not, or in a visiting relationship, that child needs both mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed,
often there is an absentee or a deadbeat dad.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is a mother who is out partying. I'm not, again, I'm generalizing, you know, grandmothers today are in their 40s, you mm-hmm know, so like everything is topsy-turvy. But I have this question for you. What in your assessment, based on again, your wide experience in a number of countries and here in Barbados, what are the critical risk factors that predispose children and teenagers to exhibit signs of poor mental health? For example, mm-hmm, withdrawal, aggression, mm-hmm, lack of participation in family activities, even bullying,
mm-hmm,
right? What, yeah, what is the root cause of these behaviors?
The root, there's so many. There are so, so many. One, for example, is trauma. And this trauma could either be emotional, sexual, or physical. I spoke about the fact that, you know, we understand the sexual and physical aspect, what can happen. You know, the thing is that let me take that back. I said we understand. Let me change that statement. We are aware of it. I wonder sometimes how much we understand it, because I see so much in everyday situations here in Barbados, how much we show a lack of understanding for the trauma children experience from being sexually and physically abused. And I have not even touched the emotional abuses yet, but I see every day how we lack the understanding. For example, a 15-year-old runs away from home or is said to be wandering away from home because of sexual abuse or physical. Well, I shouldn't say because of sexual abuse. I should say they're reported to be missing from home. And obviously, there's usually an appeal put out in the public. And then I am always blown away when I see social media comments, especially if it's a young lady. Invariably, 90% of the comments are about she looking for a man.
Mm.
And that saddens me. That saddens me. Because teenagers do not run away from happy homes. They do not.
Pamela, I just want to pause because we have to recognize our sponsor, Sagicor.
Yes.
Need to save for your children's education? You need Sagicor Saver Series. Want to build your dream home? You want Sagicor Saver Series. Have to save for retirement? Then you have to have Sagicor Saver Series. Whether for their future, your dream home, or retirement, Sagicor Saver Series is for you. With life insurance protection, cash value accumulation over time, and lump sum payments at maturity, your peace of mind can be assured. Be prepared today for life's tomorrow. Contact your Sagicor agent today at 467-7500. Or visit Sagicor.com for more details.
Back with Mental Health Matters. Pamela, you were engaging in some very interesting topic. Please continue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, I was getting back to what I was saying. Children do not run away from happy homes. I don't know if anyone, adult or child, even animals, if they're someplace that they're comfortable and happy, they don't run from that. Furthermore, for most kids or animals or anyone for that matter, that is in a comfortable and happy environment, it's really hard for the parents to get rid of them. I mean, it's really funny, but it is so hard. If a child is comfortable, they will be 30 years old and living at home because mommy and daddy or whoever is making life sweet for them. So when you see a child at 14 or 15 not wanting to come home to mommy or daddy and on the streets at all hours, they can't be in a happy home.
Yeah.
So then,
Pamela, I just can't, you know, like I'm here scratching my head because like, I'm here thinking, yes, I grew up in a very disciplined home. I mean, respect, you know, there was no question. You had to respect your parents. You had to, you know, very disciplined home. But I never thought of running away from home. Never thought of that.
Correct.
Correct. You know, because... You know, I come from a family of huggers and loving, supportive people.
Agreed, because I grew up in a very disciplined home. I mean, I knew not to mess with my aunt raised me. I knew not to mess with my aunt. And at the time, I mean, my aunt was a very powerful woman at the time. She was the registrar of cooperatives. And she was accustomed to running the cooperative department. And everyone respected her in her position and her role, you know, with the credit union and with the cooperative department. So I knew at home that she was not to be played with. And I never, ever wanted any one of my teachers to have reason to call my aunt because I knew I would get into trouble. But fear. I don't even want to use the word fear. That level of respect I had for my aunt never translated to fear of her. It never Pamela, translated to fear of her.
Pamela, to want to run away from her. Pamela, I think the roles have even reversed where we have children beating their parents and attacking their parents. You know,
correct.
We even have situations of parents going to school plants and wanting to attack X or Y teacher. I mean, everything is just where have our values gone, or respect for?
And that is because somewhere along the way, right, we lost the ability to engage in effective conflict resolution. Now, my viewpoint is not going to be the popular view, but this is my belief, okay? When we have a situation whereby the only way you can get a child to conform to what you want done is to beat that child, you are not teaching that child conflict resolution. What you are teaching that child is that when you have a problem and you are stuck, to beat your way out of the problem. So that's why you have young parents who grew up in households whereby mommy get vets, daddy get vets about something I do, because they didn't know have the tools to engage in a level of conversation and communication with their child, to show them, to teach them how to do things differently. And their answer was to beat the child. Now you have young parents thinking that if I have a problem with my child's school, I am going to go to the school and I am going to carry on the only way I know how. So when we talk about bullying behaviors, our kids are picking up these bullying behaviors from the adults in their society. I will also go back to what we see on social media. When kids do things that we don't approve of, and then you have the whole of Barbados joining in on the conversation on social media and saying all the negative things that they possibly can about them. Hello, that's cyberbullying. That's what they don't realize. They're engaging in cyberbullying because they're further dumping on these kids. So how then do you expect a child who has been taught that this is the way to deal with a situation? You don't like someone, beat them. You don't like someone, call them an idiot. Tell them they're stupid. We adults, we have raised
even to say that, even to say language like she got bipolar.
Correct.
I mean, we toss around these labels very loosely.
Yes. You wouldn't even mind if they say bipolar. The common thing is she mad. So much so that you have a lot of young people dealing with serious mental health issues, and parents are hesitating to take the children to get the help they need because they don't want their children labeled as mad. Because we have such a stigma attached to this whole label of mental health that parents would rather hide the fact that their children have help, refuse to give them the help, than to be open and say, you know what, mental health is something that is just as critical to my child's well-being as their physical health. And we have too many parents that will look at children and say, suck it up.
Yeah. You know, I often reflect on, and I ask myself, I believe in God. I believe I'm an Anglican, and I ask myself, what is God really telling us about this COVID pandemic? You know, like, we are on pause in many ways. Mm-hmm. And sometimes within the sinews of my heart and my body, I say to myself, maybe this is a time for us to do some serious introspection and look at how we manage our lives, our families, how we interact with our loved ones. I mean, interaction and loving and hugging. We are even restrained, mm-hmm. You know, but I ask myself, first of all, I don't believe in any conspiracy theory, so I'm not even going to go down there. But yet, on a deeper level, the connectedness between families, the need for human and social interaction is so vitally important. Mm-hmm. And as I keep saying, if there's one thing that's good about COVID, it's given us permission to use this language, to have this show, to talk about these issues. You know, every week, the feedback that I'm getting is stronger and more encouraging, and, mm-hmm. you know, other media entities are interested. Now, just let's take a pause and play my first selection, Bottom Bailey by the Opals.
Thank you. barom bere pulo mala sol. Una gimme me barom bere pulo mala sol. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una gimme me barom bere pulo mala sol. Una gimme me barom bere pulo mala sol. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una gimme me bottom belly pulo mala sol. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una gimme me bottom belly pulo mala sol. Una gimme me bottom belly pulo mala sol. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Una laloba, oh una laloba. Bosque así give, bosque. Oh, bosque así give, bosque. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Ay, 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 mommy, a bosque así give, a bosque así give, bosque. Oh, bosque así give, bosque. Oh, bosque así give, a bosque.
Music from The Opals, Bottom Bailey. 19 minutes before 4 o'clock. Great time for me to remind you, this edition of Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Need to save for your children's education? You need Sagicor Saver Series. Want to build your dream home? You want Sagicor Saver Series. Have to save for retirement? Then you have to have Sagicor Saver Series. Whether for their future, your dream home, or retirement, Sagicor Saver Series is for you. With life insurance protection, cash value accumulation over time, and lump sum payments at maturity, your peace of mind can be assured. Be prepared today for life's tomorrow. Contact your Sagicor agent today at 467-7500. Or visit Sagicor.com for more details.
18 minutes before 4 o'clock now, as we rejoin Tessa Chatterton-Shaw and Pamela Jones-Greenwich as we discuss mental health matters. Good evening, ladies. Back to you.
Thanks, Oliver. So, Pamela, clearly roles have been reversed. You talked a lot about trauma. So let me ask you this question. What tips or advice would you offer to parents when starting a family? How do we get this right so that our children grow up in loving, happy, supportive homes without being traumatized, without being abused, without being labeled and named and shamed? How do we get this right?
Okay.
I know there's paradox, and I have heard a lot of, you know, there's been talk about having national parenting programs. I fully support it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me too. But there are two other things I would add to that mix. I think the education should start from school. I studied in the US, and one of the things that I like about their system is that, and I did some stints in the school system there as a social worker when I was training, and they have a program whereby they teach like sex education, but a part of that sex education is about parenting. Because it's about letting kids understand from an early age about the what the responsibilities that is needed. So what they would do is give children an egg or something to that effect. But for a period of time, they would have to care for this egg or whatever it was that they were given. It could be a anatomically correct doll. For one of the schools that I did it with, it was an anatomically correct doll that had all the parts and such forth, and that it, the doll would cry to indicate that, you know, it needed to be fed or it needed to be changed and stuff like that. And it would cry at any hour. I mean, but what it did for the kids is that they had this responsibility. So what they're able to understand is that parenting is not as easy as it looks. They get that concept very early. That is something we don't do here. What we do here is what I don't agree with. What we do here is that we have kids as young as 4 or 5 or 6, parents buying them dolls, baby dolls. And I always blown me. I never bought my daughter a doll, never, never. And I would be blown away. I would see kids as young as 4 or 5, and it's girls, because you don't see boys doing it, because for some strange reason, we have the parents have this idea in their heads that the boys aren't to play with the dolls, the girls can play with dolls. But what you're doing when you do that, right, is that you're teaching this 5-year-old or this 6-year-old, before they can even read or speak properly, before they have an idea as to what they want out of their own life, you're teaching them how to mind a baby. And by not giving the boy the same very doll to play with, you're teaching the boy that it's not his responsibility to mind the baby. It's strictly the girl's responsibility. That's the first thing we're getting wrong.
That is mind blowing, Pamela.
Yeah.
We give the boy a gun.
Yeah. But that's the first thing we're getting wrong. And then we are shocked when that child reaches 15 and 16 and they're tired and they don't want to play with the real thing, because they've been taught from they've been conditioned from an early age to think that it is play when it is not play. It is a serious responsibility. And then the other thing that we are not telling our kids, boys and girls, we're not encouraging them to do, is research. I mean, when we are enrolling our kids into school, we do so much research before we sign them up for school. We look at how they're going to get to school. We look at how it will, you know, if the distance from the school, how it impacts on us getting to work, what's going to happen, who's doing collection, who's not going to be doing collection. Even down to when we are buying clothes, we examine, we do our research, what looks good on us. We will spend an entire hour in front of a mirror pulling out all the clothes in our wardrobe, trying to decide what looks good on us.
Yeah.
But we don't take that. But something as important as choosing who we are going to have a child with, we leave it up to chance.
Right.
We don't take, no research is needed to do that.
You've raised a very interesting point. And I was thinking, I have a friend who would often tease me because my husband and I are just the type of people that we had a book on parenting. You know, you learn about the milestones.
Yes.
That the children are expected to meet, you know, they sit up, they're expected to turn over, to start, sitting up, creeping, crawling. There are certain milestones, but then, you know, my friend said, boy, Tessa, you know, you got a book for everything. But I think, so yeah, I did my own research too, you know, but I don't know if many people do that, and certainly, or young people who are getting pregnant. They don't have a clue. They don't even know the family background of the man that they
nothing. Something as simple as this man I like have another child. I don't see this child. I know the woman has him in court for child support and stuff. The child doesn't come around him. Why? Why is that the case? Why is he absent from his child's life?
Yeah.
And then we have a child with him and he becomes absent from our child's life. And we're completely confused. Like, but the proof was there. The evidence was there. You just chose not to research it.
And the cycle continues. I believe that, Pamela, that we have a caller or callers, Oliver.
Yes, we do. As we say, good evening to the caller. Good evening. You're live on Mental Health Matters.
Yes, sir, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I like what you're doing this evening. God bless you. May give you more wisdom and understanding. I have a grandson, and he's in university and everything is working now. But when he was very small, his two baby sisters, he changed the diapers, he bathed them. That one out, Camomere, this is her last year, and the other one's at large. And he took them for his children, not his sisters. He bathed them, he do everything to them. Then you see, come in the house now, God be straight at the table, he's the daddy now. He did everything, mm-hmm. He bathed those children, because the mother taught him, feed them, everything, you know. Yes, they have some good, they have children out there that do these things. But we wouldn't know everything. Yes, he mm-hmm. tend to these two girls, and they're he's like a daddy to them. And still, it didn't stop him from going to Camomere, going to university, you know. So I was trying to tell you, mm-hmm. they don't get all these guns now. In our time, there was guns and dollies. But no, you know, our times change. So they don't really get guns now. Now, you put them on the late dollies. But I'm only trying to tell you, yes, they have some mothers that have little boys that look after the babies. Because it happened to my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. But I like what you're saying, though. But this generation is very it's strange. It would take me, you know, I can't even tell you about this generation along with you. It is very strange. There's a lot of reasons for children running from home, too. And that thing with the court giving the children to the back to the mother, that needs to stop. It's bigger than that. They need to give to the father and the mother. It's a mix-up. I know there's a girl now, but right now she's teaching. And this little girl, they say don't bring over everything, but everybody don't know what's going on. And this little girl, the court gives the girl to the mother. And then when the girl gets big, she has to run away because the mother had a different man. And she lives with the girl. But the child's mothers are not going to be over 16. So I'm not saying the children will go with the father. Anyhow, you have a good evening. You continue. You're very good on it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pamela, the caller raises a lot of issues in terms of setting boundaries, in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, here it is, a male child taking care of his female siblings. You know, I mean, yes, I understand there are certain situations that may require that. But at the end of the day, the two parents who created this child
should have the responsibility. Right? I do get where you're saying, because I am a firm believer in the fact that if you recognize, and I know I speak from a position of privilege, because not everyone can speak from this position. Some people are in a situation where they have no choice but to depend on their older children for the assistance. But I honestly believe that when we put so much responsibility on the older siblings, we rob them of their childhood by doing so. We rob them of their childhood. And to me, the best way to teach a child responsibility is by getting them a pet. I grew up with pets in my house. I was expected to take care of my dog. I was expected to take care of my cat. Because just like babies, dogs and cats need to be fed, they need to be bathed, they need to be taken out so that they can do their business, you know, yeah. And they require just as much time and attention, right? And that's how I was taught responsibility. So when I was out, when I wanted to go out with my friends, the first thing my aunt would ask me is, did you feed the dog? Did you leave water in his bowl?
Yeah.
You know, I have one cousin that she became pregnant at a young age. And this, when I talk about responsibility, you mentioned something earlier, Tessa, when you said about young grandparents in their 40s and stuff like that. And that is a trend that the reason why it is worrying is because you have these young grandparents and you have the parent of the child who should be the one taking on the responsibility, looking to the grandparent to have that responsibility. So they are never taught the responsibility. They're never taught the responsibility of this child. And then what happens then, grandparents get older and weaker and can no longer take care of child, and now the responsibility falls back on the parent who does not have a clue because they never had the responsibility in the first place. They never had a responsibility in the first place where they can learn how to do it right with the grandparent guiding them in terms of how to do it and get it right. Like I was saying, I have because she's still very much alive. I have a cousin that she got pregnant when she was 18. And this stood out for me. And the reason why this stood out for me, because any thought that I may have had, I mean, granted, I didn't have any thoughts of it doing it, but even if I was considering getting a child early, that changed my mind completely. Because I recall one, it was a Saturday night. We were going out, you know, the usual Saturday night routine back then, you know, you watch Mr. Bean, then your friends come and pick you up and you would go to the warehouse because the warehouse was where it was on a Saturday night back then, right? It was either warehouse or Mr. Blue, one of the two nightclubs. I can't remember which one it was, but that was the happening place back then. And my little cousin was 18 at the time. And I was 1 year older than her at 19. And we were getting dressed, we were going out. Her son was a couple months old. And as I said, my aunt raised us. And we were getting dressed, putting on makeup, playing the music. We were excited because we were going out. And our friends got to the house, blew the car horn, and we were dashing outside to get to the car. And I went like, bye, aunt. And she's like, bye, aunt. And my aunt stopped her and go like, where are you going? And she goes like, we told you we were going out. And my aunt goes like, so where the baby? And she goes like, well, he's inside sleeping. And my aunt's next question was, so what happens if he wakes up? You know, and she goes like, what do you mean what happens if he wakes up? Because in her head, she's thinking it's obvious. If he wakes up, you she's take there. Care of him. You give him the bottle. You know what he needs to. And my aunt goes like, no. I didn't go and have a baby. You did. I would suggest you take your clothes off and go back inside and take care of your baby.
I love it. Your aunt was a serious lady boy.
Yeah, that's it. Believe it or not, my cousin is now, as I said, in her 40s with two kids of her own. Well, they're grown now. This son has grown. Her own home, right? And financially in a good position. Okay. If you think about it, most 18-year-olds, and you hear about the cycle of poverty because they get pregnant early and they never catch themselves after that. And then... Yeah, and it's like they can't ever break the cycle. Well, if my aunt had allowed my my cousin to, you know,
to do as she pleased. Yeah,
walk out on her responsibility. That might have been my cousin's, you know, story today. But because my aunt insisted that you
are responsible,
take responsibility, you are responsible. I will support you, but I'm not doing it for you.
Right. Pamela, let's move on because time is flying by. Mm-hmm. I want to ask this. What type of resources exist in Barbados to help parents navigate parenting and to help them bring the best out of our children?
Okay. Well, we do have Parados, as you know, parent education. I think they are doing a fantastic job. Actually, the social worker there, Terry Best, I know she is really, really good at what she does. And we also have the child guidance unit. And I believe the psychiatric hospital has a unit that they call Thrive that is really, really good resources for parents to turn to. And we have a host of psychiatrists here that that parents can access. I know when we are talking about private psychiatrists, we're talking about the higher end in terms of the parents that with the income bracket that can afford the psychiatrist. But the child guidance unit is free for persons. Once a parent lets the school know, this is a challenge, I need help and stuff like that. The only drawback is that because we don't have that many public resources.
Yeah.
But the wait time is longer.
Yeah. But we also have family doctors, we have pediatricians, we have other professionals who can also to whom we can also reach out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are parents whose children present a whole host of things.
Yes.
Oliver, you spoke about someone who said his child or her child could not focus. So is that, you know, attention deficit hyperactive disorder? Is it what is it? It could be a multiplicity of things.
If I can say this, I know we use ADHD is a term that is frequently used, and it's I see it as an older term that so many that we are all aware of, that the medical fraternity speaks about and such forth. I like to look at things in terms of sensory challenges. A child might exhibit difficulty focusing because of sensory challenges.
Break that down for us. I understand sensory, but for the public.
Yes. So for instance, in order to be able to focus, think of the child in the classroom using a whiteboard or even the chalk and stuff like that. The positioning of the child from the board. When certain light hits the board or hits the chalk, right, it may create a visual field that is difficult for the child to manage.
Right.
So what you might have is that child can't pay attention because that is a trigger for that child, because they light, the way how the light is reflecting and stuff like that, it is messing with their sensory system. They might find that, you know, they're just uncomfortable. But they can't explain why they are uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know something? Sorry, just to inter, if you don't mind me interjecting, the whole question of lighting does impact the individual. I know someone who, for example, if they go into a brightly lit store with fluorescent lighting, they may have, maybe a panic attack or some yes. sort of anxiety.
Yes.
Because of lighting. And, yes. and these are things that we take for granted.
That is true. That is true. I was even telling someone that I went to Springer. And at the time when I went to Springer, the uniform that they wore was different than the one they wore now. If I had to wear the uniform, the overall that they wear now, I would be seen as one of those children that was that is hyper because I would be fidgeting quite a bit. In order for me to wear overall, everything must be loose fitting. So the whole idea of it sinking at the it's clinching at the waist would have created immense discomfort for me. And I would have been constantly fidgeting, trying to get this pressure off of my waist. And so a teacher looking at that and in, that they would have interpreted that as ADHD because I can't focus on what's happening on the board if I'm fidgeting with my uniform. So when we talk about when I talk about sensory challenges, I am looking at what creates that discomfort for the child that makes it difficult for them to focus on what's happening. Even in terms of vision, in order to be able to focus on something, you must have something called eye teaming. It's E-Y-E-T-E-E-M-I-N-G, eye teaming, which means that the pupils of your eyes must be able to meet in the middle so that you can focus on that one object. That's what makes the, so when you hold a finger up, that's what makes the ability to eye team is what helps you to see that one finger as opposed to two, three, or four. If you have difficulty eye teaming, it's going to be impossible for you to focus.
Pamela, I have never heard that term, but thanks for that. There is, thanks for that explanation and for that new language. Oliver, you said we have a caller.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening. You're live on Voice of Barbados Mental Health Matters.
Peace be on to each and everyone. Good evening, Miss.
Good
evening. Sir? Sure.
Hi.
Please allow me to say members one of another. Glad to know that this lady, a product of that beacon shining brightly on top of Government Hill, is there. I am
thank
so
you.
Proud. I salute you. I am a product also.
Wow.
Anyhow, good.
Fantastic.
I laughed when you spoke about your cousin and I know a lot of mothers probably laugh at that too, having mm-hmm. the baby and then want to go places and could not go because your parent, your grandmother or somebody telling you, well, you know, but you cannot go because of the baby. But a lot of parents, well, in my time, our elders used to hide a lot of things from us. You know, and they won't sit down and explain certain things to you. So people went out there and persons went out there and did things. And then, you know, after it happened, then the lecture should start long before, you know. Sometimes you had to go there and learn. You had to go there and learn from your friends. You know, they heard things. But for me now, this generation, they know a lot. You talk to them, but they have a mind of their own and they just want to do what they want to do. They are more fortunate than us. And you, I guess, I don't know if I am, I'm 60s. So I guess you may be younger than I am. But, you know, a lot was hidden from us. But congratulations, my dear. May God continue to richly bless you. Miss Shaw, thank you very much for, you know, for bringing this program because we really need it. And I say this too, you speaking about mental health with children, but you know, I listened to the program earlier today, and this society is real frustrated and stressed with all that going on. You know, people trying to get the tax online and can't get it due, and now got to pay now because of late time. And then all that frustration, you know, and some people not working. I think I'm glad that you bring this up because a lot of people is stressed out and mentally disturbed by what is going on.
Hello? Mom, I really thank you for calling. You're clearly a supporter of this program, but the stress is overwhelming at all levels of society. not just at the lower end, all sectors of the society. And and we need to voice it, we need to express it, and there's nothing wrong in doing so, and we need to get help when necessary.
If I may say something to what the caller said, she said the children of the day know a lot. And I will agree to that, but I will disagree with one thing. Knowing a lot does not translate to understanding a lot.
It also doesn't mean that you know it, know the correct. They get correct. A lot of misinformation.
Correct. And that is where the mental health issues arise, because they know but not necessarily understand. In order to be able to understand something, you have to have the capabilities to analyze and to reason.
Yeah.
Very few young people have those capabilities. And in the absence of those capabilities, what's happening is that the old people will say, you're biting off more than you can chew. You're biting off more than you can chew. And it's adding to mental health stress.
Okay. Oliver, I recognize that it's 4:10. Can I push the envelope a little bit, please?
I can give you only a few more minutes, ma'am. We do have another program lined up, but I can give you a few more minutes.
Okay, I want to ask Pamela a question about special needs population, and then I would like you to play Tempted to Touch by Arturo Tappin, my favorite saxophonist. So Pamela, when we hear the term special needs, can you describe the multiple, what they consist of, and how can parents support them in terms of their own mental health? Because now this is a different population. I don't like to use the word normal. I don't know what is normal.
What we use is typically developing and atypical developing.
So typically
developing would be all the kids that are able, that are meeting the milestones and are able to function in typically developing schools.
Okay.
Right.
So tell us a bit about what falls under special needs. What are we talking about? We're talking about Down syndrome. We're talking about
autism. Autism.
Yeah.
We're talking about cerebral palsy. But just to say this, right? Special needs, more so than the condition, special needs is the inability to achieve developmental milestones. So you may have a physical disability, which would be the cerebral palsy and stuff like that, that based on whether you have spastic or floppy, that it makes it difficult for you to achieve those physical milestones, set like raising the head and being able to keep it steady and such forth, right? So that's a special form of special needs, where we look at the physical aspect. However, a great concern is the hidden type of special needs. These are the ones with socio-emotional challenges. And these are the kids that, in my opinion, are the most at risk in not only this country, but the world over. If you think about it,
you're talking about those who would have been traumatized.
No, not that, but it could be that they have been traumatized. But I'm talking about the ones that you will see have a meltdown because things become overwhelming. So they're at school, the work is a bit difficult. They can't handle the work. They don't know how to communicate that, I can't get this done. And what you see is a is a behavioral issue that becomes problematic to the teacher and the class. Those are kids that have socio-emotional challenges. The reason why I call them the hidden challenges and what reason why those ones are very concerning for me is because more often than not, these kids look as far as the Barbadian public is concerned, normal.
Okay. Difficult
so population. When they engage in behaviors that people do not consider normal, they are castigated.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to feel sorry for the ones who look it,
yeah,
but we are very hard on the ones that we see no evidence of it.
Yeah, but they might be acting strangely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pamela, we have to wrap up, and I really have to say this. I think I need to invite you back because I don't feel as if we really, I feel that we just scratched the surface today.
And, anytime, I'll be happy to come back.
You know, so I may just continue this next week. And maybe what I also have in mind is to have an individual who is actually going through some of these issues. Mm-hmm. So I'll give that a little thought and we'll be in touch. I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge, your vast expertise.
Thank you for having me
to be here on Sunday evening. And I want to say bye to all of our listeners, and I will continue to make this as enlightening as informative, because I too am learning some new things like I-teaming, you called it?
Yeah, I-teaming.
Right. So we leave the program with Tempted to Touch by Arturo Tapien.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time. There is another program waiting to come on, but next week we'll play it first up.
All right, Oliver. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you.
Bye to all the listeners.
And this edition of Mental Health Matters came to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.